Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Life Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240 for Autumn Semester 2021. Today, review for the midterm exam. I'm going to go through what I think you should know, and then I will open it up for you to ask me questions. Also, the exam will begin at 3:35. If you have an accommodation, be sure you contact SAAS right away. If you are taking it because you're in quarantine, you can do it on Zoom, but you have to have, you can do it remotely, obviously, if you're in quarantine, but you have to have your Zoom on so that I can monitor to see that it's you taking the exam. Other than that, we're all going to meet bright and early at 3:35. 40 questions, multiple choice, true and false, numeric answers, and a small section of matching. And those are pretty much gimme questions. That's some free points, kind of. The format is identical to what you've seen on the quizzes. The third quiz is just like a classic example of what the midterm looks like. It's a mini version of it. You'll have the multiple choice and true and false section, and then you'll have a part where you calculate mortgage payments or some kind of a loan payment. You'll also have a section where you will find present values, things like that. I'll get to that in a minute, though. But it's set up so that there are enough questions that are relatively easy that you can pass the exam fine. Then they get a little bit more robust. The most difficult questions, of course, are the ones that would be the calculation. You are permitted to have your formula sheet that's in in the resources tab in ReggieNet. You can write a few notes on there quickly about what this ratio means and all that. You are also allowed to have a 4x6 note card, front and back. If you are relying on that instead of studying, you're dead right there, because you'll never make it through the test if you've got everything you're looking up on a tiny note card. Now, you obviously will also be able to use your computer, but only for the virtual TI calculator, if that's what you're going to use as a virtual VTI. If you can do it formulas if you want, but the virtual TI calculator makes it a lot easier to do the financial formulas. Yes.
So are we printing off the formula sheet, or are you providing us with one?
Oh, no, I'm not going to print it off. That's on you, Cupcake. I know you can't write everything you want. For God's sake, don't write some love sonnet to or something like that. What the hell? No, I mean, don't go overboard on it. That's supposed to be to say, this ratio means this and all that. You've got a note card, 4x6, for the stuff that's more generalized or specific. Know this. Let me go through it kind of backwards here. I could just put the exam up on the overhead here. No, I wouldn't do that. You just wouldn't respect me. That one time, I don't know if I told you, I was doing the review, and I didn't realize it was over there on the overhead. And I mean, the students were writing, I thought, damn, they're good. They're really. And it was like halfway through, I looked, oh, she. Okay, so anyway, so you notice I keep looking up there to make sure that's black right now. And so I don't have you guys writing like furiously. Okay, let me go through backwards here. The numeric part. It's just going to be, I'm going to have you get me a loan payment, an effective interest rate, and a balance, just like I did on the quiz. Now, those answer keys, by the way, are open for the quiz now, all three quizzes. But it's just, you should know how to do TVM Solver. Apps, Finance, TVM Solver, key in the information. Don't forget to multiply the number of years by 12, divide by 12 on the interest rate, get your payment. Then to get your balance, you just back out, second quit, then apps, finance, and you go down to where balance is. And you hit enter, and you just say the number of years times 12. Enter. There's your balance. I mean, I'm giving you this question. It's easy. And the effective rate, I mean, all you do is you just apps, finance, effective. You put in the APR, comma, the number of compoundings a year. And that's all there is to it. That's not hard. So, I mean, those are generally considered more difficult questions on one of these exams, and it should not be hard for you to get ace those. Now, as far as other things that I would have, as far as numerical, I'm going to have you do a yield on a treasury bill, just like I did in that skit with Mabel, the one-year T-bill yield. Not hard at all. Just how much interest you earn divided by the initial price of the bond or the bill. I'm also going to show you a stock screen for a stock. And I'll grab a screen tonight for some stock. And I'm just going to ask you some questions, okay? Okay, if you bought 100 shares of this, not counting commission, what would you pay? If you sold a number of shares of this, 100 shares of this, what would you get? I caution you that the textbook has a stunning incorrect statement. They get the bid and the ask wrong. The bid is what you sell at. The ask is what you buy at. And I can't believe that they said that the opposite way. It's just stunning. Another one where they say that the exact opposite of what's correct. The correct statement is the price earnings ratio is directly related to the risk. The higher the price earnings ratio, the greater the risk of the corporation. The lower the PE ratio, the less risky. So remember, do you remember what I told you, a PE ratio about where I consider risky versus not risky? Do you remember what number I said to look for? What was it? Say it. No, you're saying beta. I'm glad you brought that up. Beta is the first risk metric you look at. Below one, safe. Above one, risky. The high, yeah, go ahead. 30, yeah. PE ratio, about 30. Above that, look, PE ratio, and you need to know this for the exam, PE ratio is how many dollars investors are willing to pay to claim $1 shareholder earnings. How many dollars a share? So a PE ratio of 30 says that investors are willing to pay $30 to claim $1 of current earnings. Here's one that Tesla. You wouldn't happen to know what Tesla's PE ratio is, would you? 413. That's almost like you never see a company survive that has a PE ratio that high. Tesla is living off the fact that the Wall Street boys can't let it go down because they've already put hundreds of billions of dollars into it. And if it goes down, some of the houses would collapse. So they're supporting it, but at 413, in other words, if you buy a share of Tesla, you are paying $413 of real money for every $1 that Tesla makes. For the share at the bottom line. That's just insane. Okay, now there are other things that I could ask you. Well, you know, is this stock near its 52-week high or 52-week low? Something like that. Just the basic stuff. I want you to show me that you know basically how to read a stock screen now. I don't want you to show me that you're geniuses at investment. Otherwise, you'll be showing me that you're better than I am at that. But just show me that you can read screens. And now, I'll also, just like on that last quiz, I'll have you do a future value, too. You're putting money in every week or every month or whatever for a certain number of years. How much will you have at the end? Now, remember that if it's a future value, that's the one that you hit the begin. If it's a loan payment, it's almost always going to be end. Okay? So, if it's going to be something where you're saving money for something in the future, you take that toggle there at the bottom, begin. Otherwise, if it's just finding a loan payment, that's the toggle on end. I noticed that a number of students got the wrong answer on that quiz for the future value because they did it on the end instead of the beginning. There's nothing I can do about that. Like I said, I wish ReggieNet gave me a way that I could say half the points if they give this answer, because I know what that answer, where they made the mistake, but ReggieNet doesn't let me do that. Okay, that's enough about that. I'm going to go through 92 terms I've brought up this semester so far. 92. Either completely new words or terms, or a variation on something more specific than what you know in common language. Like, you know what the word spot means. That's the name of your dog, Spot. But it means something very specific in finance. Forward. Go forward. Well, in finance, it means something very specific. Words, money versus capital, a secondary market versus a primary market. Those kinds of things. What's a firm commitment underwriting? What do we mean by firm commitment? It means that the investment bankers are going to buy the issue of debt or equity. So then they're going to sell it to their their clients. Other things, flight to quality. Now, I caution you, you'll have your computers open, and you're going to have the ability to run right to the internet to get an answer, and I'll have that answer right there for you. And then you'll get it wrong, and I'll know that you went to the internet, because I'll know exactly where on the internet you got that wrong answer, because that will be one of the answers I give you in a multiple choice. A classic example of that is liquidity. Guarantee you that Wikistupedia and Investistupedia and a whole bunch of other googly sites are going to give you the wrong answer. And it'll be right there for you. Oh, I see. Am I not a genius? I can use the interwebs. And it'll be the wrong answer. Know the definition I gave you. I gave it to you 3 times, so know it. Other concepts, too. Make sure you know about financial intermediation. Remember that there were 3 different parts to matching, a surplus and a deficit economic unit. Make sure that you know that, those 3. Yeah. Wait. Testing, 1, 2. Hang on. Hello? Really? My mom. Testing. Why isn't, hello, moo, why isn't this working? Well, thank you for letting me know. I mean, why does this suck? It's on. No, it's actually dead. Hang on some, give me a minute here. I'll bet I won't know. Huh. Oh, I get it. Hello? Moo. What? Did I just have a small stroke or did someone talk to me? Wait. That was weird. Well, you know what? Why does this suck? Hello? Wait. Hello? I don't get it. Why does this suck? Okay. I'm just going to have to yell. Okay, I give up. I can't figure out what's wrong here. Oh, same as system. Hello. Nope. I got nothing. I'll just have to yell. I'll figure it out. Okay. Make sure that you know the terms like financial intermediation, also other information, more word terminology kinds of things. Flight to quality, I mentioned. More specific, somewhat more technical. Interest rates. What's the risk-free rate? What's in it? What is the risk premium? What are the parts of the risk premium? Let me try a question for you. Find someone who's trying. Sir, which would have a higher maturity premium? A 20-year U.S. Treasury bond or a 20-year single A-rated corporate bond? Which of those would have a higher maturity premium? A 20-year U.S. Treasury bond or a 20-year single A-rated corporate bond? Remember, I said it's a trick question. They'll have both. They'll have the same. They're both 20-year, so they'll both have a maturity premium of the same amount. Whatever it is, they're both 20 years, so they're both bearing 20 years of potential interest rate volatility. The same. Now, the government bond will have no default premium, but a single A will. A government bond would have a no liquidity premium whatsoever. You can sell it in a blink of an eye. Honestly, I don't trade bonds at all. So I can't tell you if it would be really hard to sell a single A corporate bond. I wouldn't imagine it would be, but I mean there'd probably be a little bit of a liquidity premium just because it's kind of like on the low end of investment grade, but it would be within a few seconds you could find a buyer. So I don't imagine if there's a liquidity premium it would be much at all on the corporate bond. But in fact, the only thing that all bonds have in common, all debt instruments, is the risk-free rate. Once you go from there, government debt instruments have nothing but maturity premium the longer they live. But all other bonds have default premium and some, to some extent, an illiquidity premium. Oh, mother's work is never done. Let's try something else here. I told you I'll have you calculate a treasury bill. Know the difference between bill, note, bond, of course, and know what is meant by the issuer versus the buyer or the lender or the investor. I could give you something like, you lend your brother $1,000 and he agrees to pay you back in 7 years. And then I give you five different descriptions. You were the issuer of a note. You were the buyer of a bill, and your brother was the seller of the bill. I'll just go through different possibilities. In this case, since you were the lender, that means you are the investor. You are the buyer. You are the purchaser. Your brother was the borrower. That means he is the issuer of the debt, the writer of the debt, the seller of the debt, the borrower. Make sure you know that distinction. Length of bonds and notes. Make sure I gave you different words in here. Remember a mortgage bond? That would be one that's collateralized. I threw some other types out there too, and I'll go through some more after the break, or after the midterm. Yeah, I wish we had a break like we do sometimes, but not this time. But what was I thinking? Mortgage bond, debenture, ETC. Remember I told you about equipment trust certificates, ETCs? Commercial paper. Make sure you know what these are. You don't need to know them in super fine detail, but like commercial paper is that borrowing for 30 days by large creditworthy corporations. ETCs are just nothing but mortgage bonds. Debentures are uncollateralized debt. Just know those the fundamental terminology. Like I said, I have poured terms and words at you. And when I get the question, what's the best way to study? Get those notes out and sit down and listen to the podcasts. You will be amazed at how much is in those podcasts that you didn't put in your notes. And yours. Well, I didn't get that there. Where, yeah, just do that. That's your first line of studying. And then the second line, of course, is the PowerPoints. Actually, someone brought up those PowerPoints. Those are a decent way to study for the exam, too. It's the PowerPoints that I've got in the Resources tab. And then, of course, after that is the midterm, is the book, the textbook. Okay, so, I mean, those are your resources, but the terminology is where you can get burned, and that's the place where you've got to focus a lot more. Let me go through here. No costs. I talked about that like the first day and the second day. Yeah, what it costs do accountants care about that we don't give a rat's butt about in finance? And similarly, what do we talk about in finance that accounting people would never even consider? Mainly because they can't. They're not allowed to and they cannot. No business organizations, the sole proprietorship, the partnership, the limited liability company, the corporation. What makes a corporation different from all other business organizational types? There are two things that make a corporation different from any other type of business in terms of structure. Anyone know one of them? Want to take a stab? Yeah. Good. That's one of its big things. Now, it could die, of course, if it's stupid, but it does not have a technical death. Like, for example, it's only been recently, scientists have found that there's this one squid that can live forever. When it gets too old, it just gets rid of most of itself, and it goes back to kind of like a small pod, and then it grows again. So it technically is immortal. However, it could be caught and turned into calamari, which is disgusting. I mean, pulling up, God. Oh, anyway. It's got an immortality. Now, there's one other thing about him, too. Yeah?
It's separate from its owners under the law. It has Social Security number.
It has an FEIN. It's separate. It is entirely separated from its owners, which means that the owners have their claim represented by something called stock. The separation is immortalized in the fact that the owners have stock. Now that takes me to something else. Make sure you understand the idea of prior claim and residual claim. You make sure you know that. I did that on one of the quizzes, and I will hit it again. By the way, you will see questions on the exam that look suspiciously similar to quiz questions. I do that on purpose. I will copy and paste a quiz question and put it into the midterm, and then I'll change some numbers or change some words around. But it'll be the same concept. So study those quizzes, because I would say that there's probably 7 questions, maybe 6, that are pretty much that copied from the quiz onto the exam. And there are others that are very similar, just different numbers. So yeah, those are a good place to study too. Yeah. Know the difference between the prior claim. Who has the prior claim? And who has the residual claim? In a corporation. Who has the prior claim and who has the residual claim? In other words, if you don't pay one, you can't pay the other. Yeah. Yes. But be sure you know the detail of this. What can this, let me try this for someone. What can the shareholders do to the company if the company doesn't pay them a dividend? Huh? Well, they can cry. They can go on Facebook and talk about how mean the company is. Well, I'm going to destroy this company. You moron, you are the company. You're the owners. Yeah, I'm going to kick myself in the ass for that. Boy, that hurt like hell. What the? No. Yeah, why did you go ahead and sue the company? You're suing to yourself. You're going to destroy your investment by doing that. Now, there are lawyers who will try to help you do that. It's called a derivative shareholder derivative action. Yeah, there's a great idea. Sue the company. If you destroy the company, you destroy yourself because you were the company, you morons. You owned the stock. Destroy the company, the stock goes away. Yeah, that'll teach you. Oh, excellent. You guys are all ready for this. I might as well just give it to you today. Yeah, exchanges versus indexes. I've done this to you before. It'll be a little bit bigger. I'll give you some different exchanges and indexes. I'll say which one's an index, which one's an exchange, et cetera, all that. So, for example, the New York Stock Exchange, is that an exchange or is that an index? Yeah. You know how you know that it's an exchange? Because it's called the New York Stock Exchange. Yeah. Now, don't trifle with me because I've done that. I've had people say, well, that's just an index. No. The American Stock Exchange, AMEX, is that one an exchange or an index? Good. I'll bet there's a clue in there somewhere. God, okay. One thing that's usually the case, if you see a number after something, like the Nikkei 225, that would be an index because it's saying this thing has 225 stocks in it. Or the S&P 500. That's not an exchange. That's just 500 stocks. FTSE 100 is another one. I mean, some of them I wouldn't expect you to know, but by the end, I will want you at least to be sort of comfortable with, if I say the Han or or I say something like a Bourse. Or if I say Philly X, you'll kind of get an idea of what those are. There are like thousands of exchanges around the world, of course. Some of them are huge. I mean, ginormous. Like the Chinese Stock Exchange is just ridiculous. And then you have these ones. When I, this one place, one country in West Africa, the Ministry of Finance people wanted me to see their stock exchange, and I thought I wouldn't have even thought about this. And so they told me that here's the website, and I went there waiting to see, you know, this nice big listing of stock. Yeah, the exchange had 30 stocks on it. I thought, this isn't an exchange, this is an index. Oh, this is an exchange. And even worse was, it was like only one or two companies had any trading at all going on in them. But for the most part, if you see a number, that's a dead giveaway that it's not an exchange, it's just an index within an exchange. Make sure you know concepts like liquidity, as I said, financial intermediation, words, terms like flight to quality, stage two flight to quality. I've talked about current events. For example, what is the Fed doing as far as liquidity in the economy goes? What has it been doing for several years? What would you say? You've got to know this. You've got to know this. It doesn't really, I don't care whether you get it right on the exam or not, but you're going to face the consequences, and they are going to be hella consequences coming real soon for what the Fed has been doing for the last, since easily 2017. Anyone got? Yeah. They are injecting money into the economy. They have been adding liquidity to the economy. They add liquidity. They've been pouring money in. In other words, they're printing money to make everyone okay, to keep the economy from collapsing. In the short run, printing money does what to real interest rates? Real interest rates go where when you print money? Down, because the supply of money goes up, the price of money, interest rates goes down. In the long run, what happens to overall interest rates as you print more money than the economy can absorb? What happens? You get hyperinflation. You get inflation. So interest rates all go up because of the expected inflation premium finally biting. In the short run, the risk-free rate goes down because real interest rates go down and expected inflation goes nowhere. In the long run, it doesn't matter that real interest rates have gone down. The expected inflation premium is going to more than go above what it should. And so you'll have hyperinflation. That's where we are sitting, right on the edge of it right now. The Fed knows it. Even President Biden, it was amazing. He said, look, we're about to have interest rates go up because the money supply is going to be crushed. We're going to have to do it. And, of course, that's going to mean that we're going to have some inflation for a while until that money supply gets under full control. And he said, okay, interest rates are going to go up. As interest rates go up, what happens to prices of securities? Interest rates go up, prices of securities go where? Remember on the board when I showed you the price of the bonds went down, what happened to the yields? They went where? Up. So guess what's going to happen when interest rates go up over the next 6 months? Interest rates go up, securities prices are going to go down. That means people are going to see their retirement accounts lose value, the stock market's going to buckle under the pressure, and it's going to be a mess for a while. It's going to be painful as hell. And they will blame the current administration for it. Everyone will, as they did every other time this has happened. It's just the way politics is. Politics is politics. But we'll also have some other factors. When risk goes up, what happens to prices of securities? If risk goes up, where do prices of securities go? Risk goes up, prices go down. Good. So as we come closer to a new war, which we will have within the next 4 to 5 years, and it will be a hell of a war, thank God you'll fight it instead of me. Send me postcards, please. That risk of that going up is going to cause a suppression of securities prices. Good news. I showed you a few quick things, just side notes. I had you look at the SEC's documents you can get, the 10Q, 10K, 8K, And I brought up some terms like the management discussion and analysis, MD&A. Make sure you know those terms. Where do I find the MD&A? Okay, where do I go to find the annual financials? Where would I report a non-recurring event? Remember that one? Non-recurring events you have to report. If one of you, if you, sir, get abducted by aliens, I have to file a report. I actually do have to file a report if that happens. What was the report I had to file? Do you remember? Form what? Yes, very good. And when you come back, do I have to file another report? Say yes. Yes. Why? That was another non-recurring event. It's not every day you come back from an alien abduction. Okay? Ratios. I am not having you calculate numbers. I am having you show me that you understand the damn numbers. Okay? So what does it mean, net margin? Which would be bigger? The current ratio or the burn? If total assets go down, what happens to ROA? Yes. What ratio being below one would freak me out? I would dump that stock as fast as I could if I saw one ratio that was below one. Yeah. No, that's another thing. Entirely, but you might be right about that. No, it's times interest earned. What ratio can't be bigger than one? There's one. I mean, other terms. Risk, obviously, the beta, you need to know what it is. Mathematically, I haven't shown you, but you know it's a measure of risk. I mean, what's discounting versus compounding? One of them is for present values, and one of them is for future values. Compounding and discounting. I mean, I've given you so much of this. NOPAT. Once I've got NOPAT, what do I add back? I'm trying to get down to free cash flow. I've got NOPAT. What do I add and what do I subtract? And capital expenditure. Okay, you add back depreciation, you subtract capital expenditures, you subtract changes in net operating working capital. So if inventory goes up relative to everything else in your currents, that would be that would take free cash flow because money is going away into your inventory. A matter of fact, that would have been a great thing. I just had another artwork prepared for the shows for the winter, for the Christmas season. I could put it in there. Change in operating working capital. $200 is now gone, even though it's not in the income statement. I've lost that. Inventory went up $200. That means my free cash flow went down $200. If no other things change in current liabilities and current assets. I'm going to show you a screen. Yes, I talked to you about that. I mean, I've given you so much information. I mean, like my name is Pizza Hut because I deliver. I haven't given you everything, but I've given you a pretty good shot. Ask me questions. Go ahead. You got a question? Yes. Those are definitive. They should be definitive. There might be, always check those to make sure there's not a glitch. But I finally synced back up everything with Cengage and ReggieNet. They don't sync because some students' names are not the same in ReggieNet as they are in Cengage, which I tried to stop from happening, but I think it's all very current now. Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up because I keep forgetting that that's a way too much like work getting them synced, but they should be right now. What else? Yeah. On a 4x6 card. It has to be on a card or on that formula sheet if you've got some scribbles there. Yeah. Okay, it could be zero. And I'm trying to think if there's a way I could hint, and it's a little difficult. Well, the debt to total assets. Debt plus equity equals total assets. So in other words, debt couldn't be larger than total assets because that's part of total assets. I mean, your head is part of your body, so your head could not have a bigger volume than your whole body could. Unless you were a really egotistical creator on TikTok. What else? Yeah. Well, I found out something kind of annoyed me. Looks like there's some kind of firewall that's slowing it down, but you could go to Apple iTunes. But here's the original, isu-prof.com. There's my podcasts. And you go, you can see clear down, all of them are there. And if you want to listen to podcasts from another semester, going clear back to 2011, you can do that if you want. And then if you don't want to be on my creepy-ass website, my channel on Apple iTunes is Illinois State Collegiate Compendium. And don't forget to give me a like there, right? Right, if you go there. But I mean, obviously, you could download all of these and you could replace all your music in your smartphone with my lectures and just live the dream. Hey, I got 5, yeah! Of course, I did that for myself. No, it won't let the creator do his own. But anyway, yeah, that's where you can get them. Is app, either way, it doesn't matter, but you can get them either way. This is probably more convenient for you if you're wanting to listen to them on a smartphone, obviously, just to go to my channel on Apple iTunes. So what else do you have to ask me? Now, tomorrow night from 6:30 to 7:30, I will open up my office hours link in Zoom. You just go into ReggieNet, and you click on it, and you'll see I'll be just sitting there, living the dream. I'll have my cats there. I'll have some snackies, and I'll just be waiting for you to show up if you want to ask some last-minute questions or make some last-minute threats about knowing where I live and what brand of tires I use so that you can slash them properly. But, yeah, that'll be for about an hour. Don't come with any heavy-duty questions, for God's sake. But if it's just last-minute things, that's fine. Go. Say what? No. You don't need to know it. Didn't show it to you? Not going to ask it. Okay. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.